On this edition of The Droids, we talk the Mandalorian trailer, what we saw at D23, what we took away from it, and so much more about the upcoming series on Disney Plus premiering November 12th. All that and more on The Droids. Welcome back to The Droids You're Looking For, a Star Wars podcast. Alongside Ryan and Sam, I am Mike, and another episode this week. There's just too much news. We have to do multiple episodes this week following D23. We teased it in the last episode when we talked about The Rise of Skywalker, that teaser trailer from D23. If you haven't listened to that episode, go back to it. So many great thoughts from the group on that one. We're going to talk The Mandalorian in this edition, and then we will follow it up with an Obi-Wan series discussion, as well as a Cassian Andor mention. I mean, there's a lot more to talk about with the Obi-Wan series because we didn't learn anything new about Cassian Andor. But we'll talk about that in another episode. This edition is The Mandalorian, and I think it's fitting in this pod to talk about the new introduction of the ages of Star Wars, because that's going to help with where we place The Mandalorian. For the first time on stage at D23, Kathleen Kennedy, Star Wars Lucasfilm, presented this grand timeline of Star Wars, and we've never heard it referred to as the Age of the Republic, the Age of the Rebellion, and the Age of the Resistance. And I gotta say, I think I like it. I think there's a way that they're gonna package that into some new things that they're gonna try to sell, but I also I think it's not a bad way to consider all these eras.
I think it's great. I think it's concise. Thank God we could stop saying, like, during the time of, like, the prequel trilogy, you know, now we have an in-universe way to say it, which makes us feel real good. You know, it makes us feel like we're part of it. Oh, that was during the Age of the Resistance. Oh, that was during the Age of the Republic.
Yeah. Like, we're telling folklore.
I don't have to keep looking up, like, BBY, ABY, what's the, when's this, how many 12 years before the battle yet? I don't know that.
When I'm talking to my grandpa and he asks me what Star Wars is, I don't have to say, well, the first three, which are actually chronologically the second three, I just say, listen, grandpa, it's the Age of the Republic. And then he'll know exactly what I'm saying.
Well, so Mike, where
is, and he'll say, was Patrick Stewart in that one? And I'll go, oh. And I'll divert him over to Sam. This is an imaginary party where Sam and my grandpa are both there.
And we're having a great time.
Yeah,
I love
you,
grandpa.
Fast friends.
I think you'd get along.
Well, before we start the Mandalorian conversation and talk about where it fits in the timeline, join us on social media, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, The Droids Pod Podcast on Facebook, Droids Pod on Twitter and Instagram, and of course email us at droidspod@gmail.com. Let us know your thoughts on the trailer and all the news from D23 as well. Rate and review us on iTunes. We will owe you a life debt, I believe, if you do. So, you know, that's pretty good to have in your pocket if you need four podcast hosts to come through for you at a desperate time.
Yeah, I mean, but what good does it do you in the end, like when your son kind of grows up to be an asshole anyway?
What's funny about the ages of these things is that we're talking about The Mandalorian, which happens between the Age of the Republic and the Age of the Rebellion.
Exactly.
So I guess it's like the Age of the Rebellion.
Oh.
Or the Republic.
Sorry, this is a question. Does it?
Okay, go ahead, Perd.
Am I stupid? Like, when does The Mandalorian take place?
I believe it's supposed to be... Well, no.
In the Rebellion. It's between episode 3 and 4, right?
It is. It is. No, sorry. It is after Return of the Jedi. No. It's the Obi-Wan series is the one that takes place 8 years after Revenge of the Sith. The Mandalorian.
So it's part of the Resistance
yes.
era.
There we go.
The Age
there
of Resistance.
There it is.
I assume since Jon Favreau was doing it and he has such a expletive deleted for the older times in the Star Wars canon that it was the Rebellion, but it's actually the Resistance. Okay.
So I'm pulling it up now just to take a closer look at what they presented on stage. And so Age of the Republic, it basically leads up until Rebels, and so Obi-Wan series will be during the Age of the Republic, even though the Republic technically has ended by the end of episode 3.
Oh, I see. So they're having it bump up. Like, it's like the beginning of the next one is the end of the last one. There's
essentially.
Interstitials. I see. Okay.
Yep. And so
I guess that's how most, that's standard, how most things work.
There's going to be a very large gap, just as there was in the, between the films, from Return of the Jedi to Mandalorian won't be as large a gap, but then the Mandalorian to The Force Awakens and Resistance is 30 years. So it's the Mandalorian is back at the end of the Age of the Rebellion. Which is why, when you watch the trailer, we start with the helmets of the stormtroopers basically destroyed in the sand. These two
I've been telling you to see someone about
trailer,
that.
I love that they kind of held on them for a while. I think that's with the music that they paired it with. But it was like, let's not just immediately go to flash cuts and make this thing fly through. It was a really nice, slow build at the beginning of this trailer.
Also, I think for me, like, one of the this trailer really scratches an itch that I've had for a while where it's like, where it feels like this feels like a wartime story, and I think we all know I adore anything like, so what I'm about to say, like, I adore anything with the Star Wars label, but one of the things that can happen with the saga films is that they lean, you know, they're trying to do so many things. They're war films, they're fantasy films, they're sci-fi films and stuff. And so sometimes you don't get it. You can forget that all this is taking place like during a galactic war. And I just feel like when you have that imagery that is so evocative of, like, you know, helmets lined up or helmets on pikes or things like that, like, it really does feel like, oh, this is a lawless time. This is a gray area. This is where it's funny for a show that's seems like it's going to be, you know, a smaller story within Star Wars. It, like, there's some shorthand they do in here that gives it, like, real scope, like, that reminds you, yeah, this is one story in a much, much, much larger world, which I think is great.
Yeah, and I mean, not to get, you know, too serious, but it's starting to portray, as Star Wars expands and things like that, that the war that's happening in Star Wars, like all war, affects different places differently. You know, like, you know, when you're with the Mandalorian or in Episode 4, when you're like in Mos Eisley, it's like obviously the idea of the Empire and the presence of the Empire is affecting those people differently than, for instance, when later in the Age of the Resistance, in The Last Jedi, we see people that are flourishing off of war, and it's not affecting them directly day to day, other than the financial gain they're getting from it. So I think that it's interesting that the more stories that they tell, I'm glad that they're not showing this homogenous idea of like how war affects a grand, you know, a world, essentially. And I think that that's kind of, that could lead to very interesting stories.
Well, a lot of this is the aftermath, because it's the fall of the Empire in Return of the Jedi, and then how the galaxy responds, and how these areas where maybe some of the local Imperial governors are still trying to hold on to their power, and stormtroopers are still trying to assert themselves, but they no longer have the overall backing of the Empire. So how does that fall out? How does that all play out, and how does it affect individuals on different planets? I think that's really appealing and really interesting to see.
Yeah. And how does this affect the world when Palpatine is obviously going from person to person by touch, like falling the Washington. If we're going off the assumption that that's what's happening, and I think we are, you know, what does that mean for everything? Is Werner Herzog the Emperor? I don't know.
It's vaguely reminiscent to me of Firefly. Like the idea, like there was that whole backstory of, you know,
and
there's
the snake
been this
has eaten its own tail.
The
Mandalorian
right.
is reminding us of Firefly. Which is reminding us of Mos Eisley.
But I mean, just the idea of, like, this is where, you know, this is where sort of expats and soldiers who no longer, like, people who, soldiers of fortune, I guess you'd call them, you know, don't know their place. It is a really, really interesting period of time. And it just, I don't know, it makes me think, like, yeah, where do all these people go who fought for, you know, the clear superpower, the supposed winning side, you know, not all of whom could have been absolute monsters. It's really, you know, it's really interesting.
What I'm saying, Sam, is take my love, take my land, take me where I cannot stand. I don't care. I'm still free. You can't take the sky from me, Sam.
And that's a quote from Attack of the Clones?
That's Dex said that. He sings that karaoke night at the bar. Anyone who hasn't watched Firefly, that meant nothing to them. And I'm guessing from Mike's reaction that he may be among them.
Well, that's it. I've been meaning to catch up.
Let's talk about this trailer. Can I be honest with you guys? So, because I'm nothing if not honest. Here's the thing. Before this, The Mandalorian, I was excited conceptually, but nothing about it had made me all that excited yet. Until I saw this trailer. Now, when I say not all that excited, you know, there's a basement for how excited I could get for a Star Wars live action TV show.
Yeah, but
if someone had said we're going to make one, this isn't what I would like choose for it to be about. But when I saw this trailer, I am fully on board. What a great piece. Even if the show doesn't end up being good, I'm sure it will be. This trailer was so dope and it looks so good. And Werner Herzog is in it. And we knew that, but like he's talking more. I thought it was great.
But it may be because it's Star Wars and I love Star Wars, but it just
feels... cuts a guy in half.
It just, to me, this trailer feels like it's its own piece of storytelling, even though it's not telling you a full story. A lot of trailers I kind of now gloss over, and I love trailers. They don't feel like they actually give me, I don't know, enough to intrigue me as it's going. This does. This, with the slow build that I talked about at the beginning, I love it, and I love the music, and I love how we only really get to one piece of dialogue in the entire thing. And it really is beautifully done, and it makes me long for the age of all trailers getting me this excited.
Yeah, and I don't know what I was expecting before I saw this, but like the tone really sold me. Like I was like, oh, this show's gonna be like intense.
I think
it's not gonna be just like a dude walking around in like sand.
I think that the tone felt really good. I mean, I think the other thing that just really like hit me was I didn't know what to expect. As it was a TV show, I didn't know what to expect from, like, scope and scale, and I didn't know what, like, really visually to expect, you know? I didn't know if it was going to feel more like, and I love these shows. I love Firefly. I love Battlestar Galactica. I love, you know, Star Trek and stuff, but there's definitely, you know, there are budgetary limitations, and there are, you know, you feel the set a lot more on a TV show than you do on a feature film, and like this looked really awesome. I mean, there is some breathtaking imagery that's like dropped into this trailer that's really, really cool. I mean, you know, the Mandalorian walking against the sunset. We talked about the helmets lined up. I think maybe my second favorite image in the trailer is probably his ship flying over, like. It looks like those salt flats or like...
Oh, my God. That's what I was literally thinking. Really striking.
That type of imagery feels so Star Wars to me because it's... I described it as salt flats, so clearly it's like... It's recognizable. It's a little bit familiar, and yet it looks unlike anything on Earth. And that's the magic touch that Lucas had in the... during the Age of the Rebellion.
it's giving us that sense of like familiar but somewhat alien that that Iceland gave us all 5 years ago before every movie shot there, you know.
Remember we saw
like the volcanic rock in like Rogue One and we were like, oh man, this is perfect, and now we're just like, yeah, it's Iceland.
Right.
This
will
be the new one wherever they shot this.
Well, they just shot it, what, in L.A. on a soundstage, and they...
Well, no, as you know, Jon Favreau really likes to shoot on location with practical effects, so I think they probably went to Utah.
This actually should get an animated Emmy nominee.
How do you get on the plane with all those coins in his pocket, though?
Is it just beeping like crazy? He's giving out coins to TSA agents to let them through.
Greasing the wheels.
He's gonna be rich in the made up economy that he's holding in the country that he's gonna found.
I do want to go back to, I think it's like one of the, after they show the ship flying over the kind of green terrestrial planet, there's the landing where it almost looks like concept art kind of come to life. And in a way of, you know, it's digital concept art because it's where he's walking under a giant archway. But it looks almost reminiscent and referencing to like original Star Wars concept art, but also then has motion in it as he walks into what looks like some sort of market. And it just, it really struck me because it was like, oh, all right, this feels pretty Star Wars. And most of it does, but it was just that shot right there. I kind of froze frame on it and I'm like, I can just look at this for a while.
Well, what I thought was really cool was about the trailer specifically was like this juxtaposition of like all of this Star Wars imagery with like a very, like the trailer is very contemporary. You know, it's like conceptual. It's very rhythmic, and I've never seen Star Wars kind of like do something like that. And that's what I thought was like so cool about it. It was like we've seen a ton of Star Wars trailers. We talked about one last week, and. Like, they're all great, but this was different than every single one, which is cool because we're moving into, like, it's establishing that we're moving into a different time, like, you know, the age of the Resistance. and we're seeing kind of a show that might be a little more intense than, like, the Star Wars we've seen before. And, like, just, like, from, like, one point, the music hitting while that tentacle girl turns around and winks, I was like, that's the coolest thing I've ever seen.
No, not calling referencing her a Twi'lek?
Well,
I mean,
I want to make it clear.
This
I didn't
is a
know
Star
that
Wars
I wasn't.
Pod.
I didn't. I was gonna try and say face, but I want to make it clear at the. I didn't know it was called a Twi'lek. I don't want to make it sound like I was objectifying her more than I meant to. I had no other modifiers than tentacle girl. But when that Twi'lek woman turns around and winks on the beat, I thought that was great.
It's a shot that it's definitely, I mean, you know, trailers are so sophisticated now, and like the way they tell story, the way they cut to music, the way they use music and sound effects and rhythm and everything. I think more than, you know, we're out of the age of like cut together the most exciting clips and throw them in or the funniest or whatever.
Yeah,
and it's like that's a moment. That's one of the moments that it's like. It like snaps your attention back. It makes you sit up and like lean in. Do we want to go through just because, you know, do we want to like talk like favorite shots or moments from the trailer, or were we, I don't know, Mike, if you were, you know, wanted to like try to run through like
beat, or I think we've touched on a lot of different moments. And so I think calling out some of our favorite things, I do want to note a couple of things. I believe it was announced just somewhere on Twitter. Someone found out the cinematographer from Rogue One is back for The Mandalorian. I don't know if he's back for every episode, but you can see some of this feeling familiar from Rogue
One.
Yeah,
that tracks.
Yeah,
that's
a good idea
for
visual coherence.
I love that.
Yeah.
And it feels that way. And then the other thing is that I like that we kind of get almost a nice character introduction moment throughout the entire thing, which brings me to maybe my favorite moment of the entire trailer, the introduction of not IG-88, but IG-11, who happens to be voiced by Taika Waititi. And if we know anything about Korg, from the MCU, I'm very excited to get to know IG-11, especially in the shot that we see as he's spinning around and reminding you of Shadows of the Empire and how difficult it was to take down IG-88. It's just a beautiful moment in the trailer.
First off, anything that could remind me of Shadows of the Empire, I'm way for. But this is news to me. I assumed that was IG-88, which was also exciting to me, despite the fact that I defeated him, obviously, in the Age of the Republic.
Well done.
Oh, excuse me. No, it was the Age of the Rebellion. It was between 4 and 5.
Yeah,
anyway,
you
know, we're still getting used to this stuff. We're still taking it for a walk. But that's very cool. And that's the character that Taika Waititi is doing is very interesting because this seems to be my word of the day. I see some juxtaposition happening between the actions and the voice.
Oh,
and
definitely.
That's always good for comedy.
Well, and I didn't expect that he was going to voice anything. I thought that he was directing an episode, and having Taika Waititi's sensibilities as a character is always a win. It's a winning moment in anything that I've seen.
Agreed. I do need to note, there was a big thing made at the Star Wars Celebration about how they made the miniatures of the spaceships. So that they would look real, because Jon Favreau's really into that. There is one shot in space where it's clearly miniatures, and it looks really fake and out of place. I love miniatures. I do. And, like, I think practical effects are cool, and I loved, like, that video they showed of how they did it, but it does look distractingly old.
So Ryan, you're just, this is where you're telling Favreau to, like, sit down. This is where you're just
I'm not out here trying to earn a coin, all right? I already got one. I got my validation. I got my chef coin, my man. And we're not talking about sandwiches anymore. I'm talking about Star Wars, and that shot looks a little fake.
Ryan, what's your favorite shot, man?
It was the one I said with the Twi'lek woman, the nice Twi'lek woman. Just like, I just think that moment is perfect. It's not connected to anything else we've seen, so it just in like very quickly opens the world up, you know, where it's like we've been following the Mandalorian, we've been seeing his ship, and then it's like, oh, he'll be dealing with like all these different characters. It's going to be this whole big world, and I think that's very exciting. It's a lot to do with one shot.
I didn't expect that was going to be your answer, so I'm like, now I've got two, because Mike so Mike sort of took mine, right? I didn't play that game, so I was just like seeing how the IG units like move and fight was so exciting. I was like, oh, I never thought about that. That's so cool. So that was one. And then I'm torn between the moment with the door or Werner Herzog. I guess I'll go with the door. The moment with the door, which is kind of like it's the sort of climax of this trailer, but you know, it's a perfect like classic Western move. It's like a shot from the hip, you know, but the Mandalorian, you know, somebody falls or he knocks him over or he knocks him back into one of those doors.
An irising door.
Thank you. I was like, a door that closes like a camera lens, and then he shoots the panel and it just rips the dude in half.
Well,
so
you left out one part of this Rube Goldberg device, which is that he grapple hooks him forward into the door.
Oh, that's what I was trying to. Yeah.
Which is just so cool. I don't know if you guys know this, but when I was young, I had this obsession with grappling hooks.
This is
so
news.
I made one out of a clothes hanger. I used to climb up my jungle gym.
That's awesome.
I couldn't do that now.
I said a couple episodes ago, the 1989 grappling hook is one of my horcruxes. if I could get a screen used 1989 grapple gun from Batman 89.
So needless to say, whenever a grappling hook is involved, you boys in.
I have a question for you about Pedro Pascal, and not necessarily, we're not getting a lot of his performance, and I guess the Mandalorian in general. How much are we going to get of him out of his helmet? You know, what we've seen so far has been all under the helmet. Are we going to think that this performance, for the most part, is trying to lean into what people loved about Boba Fett and not revealing? I mean, I know that we're going to get him out of the helmet. That's going to happen. But is it going to be 50-50? Or is it going to be mostly helmet? I mean, I'm just kind of curious because I don't know how much they can go into this. Maybe it's the first episode where we're still trying to learn more about him without him eventually spending most of his time out of the helmet.
Can I point to the fence on this one?
Yeah.
I got a theory. I think the whole first episode, he's in the armor.
Yep.
And then the last scene is like him getting on a ship, kicking back, taking the helmet off. And then I think from then we'll see him without the helmet with certain comrades. With when he's on the ship by himself. But I think the first episode almost entirely in the helmet.
Yeah, I was about to say that, like, I think he'd be in it the whole show. But that's kind of crazy now that I think about it. Like, you don't hire Pedro Pascal to, like, do the, like, walking around if you're going to.
Yeah, because then they could have just gotten anybody.
Yeah, and then they just would have hired him for the voice. Yeah, I think that's a good shout. Maybe it'll be like in the, or we'll get like a little tease, like the helmet will come off and we'll see like his silhouette from behind and then not see his face till like the second episode or something.
Yeah, I think that, I mean, either one of those would seem pretty feasible for the way these stories play out. I also think we're going to get some sort of crazy action-heavy opening sequence. Like, they're going to start the series with something we've maybe seen in here. Maybe it is the door closing on him and using the grappling hook. I feel like there's just going to be this buildup of him walking in somewhere and having this altercation with several people that he fights off because he gets his bounty and brings it back to the ship. And that's going to be like an opening 10 minutes that is meant to draw everybody in and that we'll be talking about for, you know, months to come. I do want to say, there's some things in this that are hinting at the possibilities of how you connect to other stories. One thing that came out is that in the back half of the trailer, they might have a character who they introduced, I think, on the Star Wars show, who I don't know what species he is, but he could be Oga from Oga's Cantina at Galaxy's Edge. You know, and for a minor character to potentially have something that means something in a larger part of the Star Wars universe is a cool note. But the thing that came up as we were talking about this is the age, of course, of the, what is it again? The Ribistance?
Ribistance. This would be the Ribistance.
The Ribistance, yes, with the B. The Ribistance. At that point, what's happening with the Millennium Falcon? What have we talked about with the Millennium Falcon in the past? This is the age of scoundrels, bounty hunters, kind of, as we talked about, lawlessness, Western style. When have we talked about in, say, previous Star Wars films about what happened to the Falcon between Return of the Jedi and The Force Awakens?
Well, I think...
We know, but Daisy Ridley as Rey said, oh, Unker Plot stole this from the Irving boys who stole it from somebody else and somebody else. Would we potentially see the
Duquesne.
Falcon... Duquesne. Yes, there it is. Could we see Duquesne having stolen the Falcon at some point, maybe not in the first season, but at some point in The Mandalorian? Because if the Falcon, obviously we love the imagery and the iconography of the Falcon, if it can be brought into The Mandalorian and we find out how it was taken from Han Solo, that could be pretty incredible. You wouldn't get Harrison back, but you could just show that someone else had gained possession of the Falcon.
Yeah, like someone in a bar is loudly like, and then I stole it from them, fastest ship in the galaxy. And someone's like, oh, ignore Duquesne.
Yeah, it could be that little, or it could be something more. I just think there's a lot of possibilities that we're going to cross over with so many other storylines and so many other characters, which is exciting.
I quickly, just a follow-up in the droids world before we wrap up. I don't know if you guys have seen, there's been a video going around of Jon Favreau on the red carpet giving, like, the reporter a coin.
Oh, yeah.
She's a D23, and he's like, crossing. So you're a real Star Wars fan. Like, you have a Star Wars tattoo. Here's a coin. And all I could think of, he had an interaction with that person for about 15 seconds, and they just said, I have a Star Wars tattoo, which they may. And they said, I'm a real Star Wars fan. And he said, you are? And all I could think of was that assistant who never got the coin.
Oh.
Who spent probably 20 hours a day, you know, working for Jon Favreau. And he just gave it to this reporter who said, I'm a real Star Wars fan. And he took one of his 50 coins out of his heavy pockets and handed it over.
It is funny, though, now that everywhere you go, it's like you see Favreau in that belt. Cinched super tight and his pants just like hanging down, constantly hitching up his drawers. Now we know why.
He needs cargo.
The coins have
he
become
needs
a real
pants.
Thing. You know what? When I liked his old stuff when the coins were underground. Like the days of Chef. The Zathura coin.
All right, we're getting a little close to wrapping up this edition of the pod. I do want to say, in the shot where we see all of the people frozen in carbonite as the Mandalorian is walking, say, out of a room, do we think that that's Werner Herzog? Do we think that's his character in the first frozen in carbonite spot?
I never even thought of it.
Yeah, don't know. Sure.
It's
yeah,
either
I think,
that,
yes,
it's either
I think,
his
no,
character
I think that.
Or an old witch.
I think it's no, I think it's that character. I think you're right, Mike.
Well, and before we finish the Mandalorian,
because he looked like he was howling in pain.
Before we finished The Mandalorian, there was also a poster that was revealed right before the teaser trailer came out. And that poster showed moisture evaporators, it showed twin suns, and it showed sandcrawlers. So it's been alluded to that we might see Tatooine. Now we know we're going to see Tatooine. Tatooine may not be the main basis for where this is because a lot of shots in this don't look like Tatooine, but we're going there at some point.
I like it. I like it. It seems weird still to have the Disney Plus logo like right there at the bottom. It does feel like it's kind like weirdly off brand for how I've grown up with Disney, you know? Mm-hmm. But I mean this is the exact tone and this is the picture you want for this show. It's a great poster.
Well, that's going to do it for this edition of the Droids Pod. We've talked about The Mandalorian. Go back and listen to our Rise of Skywalker teaser podcast. We'll have another one about the Obi-Wan series. So much more. Great week of news and so much to talk about. Guys, can't wait to talk about it again. This has been The Droids You're Looking For, a Star Wars podcast. What they throw?
Grappling gun?
Is that Annie? I think it is you.
That was
you were just a little boy.